Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847. Evergreen.
It's no wonder everybody says nobody beats a Dayton Andrews Dodge deal. I mean nobody. They must sell 200 cars, trucks, and vans to break all sales records. In order to do that, they'll guarantee $1,000 if they can't beat any deal you bring into them on any new or used vehicle in stock. Every new drastically reduced. Every used vehicle drastically reduced. How about no money down? Take advantage of these great offers with lender's approval. $1,000 guaranteed includes rebates, and they reserve the right to buy back the vehicle from the selling dealer to give to their customer at a lower price. Ask about the $4,000 minimum trade-in allowance. Check out the Dodge Caravans, the Durangos, and the Neons. This week, Dayton Andrews Dodge is offering the lowest prices and also no money down. Call 321-0500. See that the Dayton Andrews Dodge way beats all the other ways to shop for a vehicle. 22nd Avenue and US 19 in St. Petersburg, Dayton Andrews Dodge.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fancy Coffee Shop Coffee Pourer.
Mr. Fancy Coffee Shop Coffee Pourer.
What do you do with a master's degree in art history? You get a nose ring and pour coffee for a living.
Pour it on now.
Why is it called a latte? Maybe because it costs a latte, and it takes a latte time to make.
Whole lot of latte.
Someone ordered a cappuccino? Step aside. Let the man who works the milk foamer take over.
Step aside.
Sure, you charge $5 for a cup of coffee. It's putting that tip jar out that takes real guts.
Yeah.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, guru of the ground roast. It's not the caffeine that gives us the buzz, it's you.
Mr. Fancy Coffee Shop Coffee.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Fort Collins, Colorado.
I'm Doug Rose, owner of the Green Mamba Jet Dragster.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jefferson, you're driver of the number one local wheel modified and number 94 Super Late Model. And you are listening to Short Track America.
I haven't got a clue, Craig.
It's possessed like its owner.
Real Racing USA coming at you live from the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in beautiful Bradenton, Florida. I'm Rick Angies.
I'm Craig Clark.
Jack Smith and the phone.
Try turning your switch on, Jack.
The switch is on? Okay, fine. And my name is Jack Smith, and the phone number to call us
is
941-748-3490. Write that down, because you're going to want it shortly.
Nobody will call.
748.
Scared.
Might cost them $20.
What is it again? 748.
Might cost them 748-3490. 941-748-3490.
You know what I want? I want Terry Wall, who's the great protector of women in racing, to call me up and tell
women's
me.
Rights in racing.
Yeah, women's rights in racing.
Women's rights in racing.
To tell me how great it was that Aaron Crocker almost won the ARCA race last
year. Or Danica Patrick's in row number two for the Indy 500.
Well, that's good.
And Sarah Fisher's qualified. And
that's good.
Milka Dunno destroyed the car.
So, Jerry, we want to know how you feel about all this. You know you're like he says, you're the protector. When we're so,
Jerry Falwell died.
Well, he drove the number.
The God car.
The God car.
The God car. And that was our moment of silence for that.
Thank you, Lord.
Hey, I watched the end of that TV show you were talking about last night.
Oh boy!
Oh boy!
Oh boy!
Oh boy. There's some trippy people there.
Yeah, Clearwater's a crazy place.
Oh yeah, we don't chase people around though.
No, we don't chase people around.
What were you watching?
We don't. Is
you better watch out, Ted. They taught me how to do it.
I'm not going to talk about it. They'll be chasing me around. Drove that one poor guy crazy. They drove him nuts. Anyway,
There's a skill to that, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Is it as bad as that show Stunt Junkies? Did you ever see that?
No, this ain't even close. This is real life.
This is real deal.
That was real deal.
So what are we talking about tonight, Craig?
Safety, 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 safety.
Well, Craig, your voice changed.
Safety.
Yeah, he's sitting in my spot.
So, Craig, what are we talking about tonight?
Oh, I don't know. A couple things. What do you want to know?
What are we talking about tonight?
Well, we've got in the Snook River Grill here with us, we have a good friend of mine who we work together with, Mr. Keith Grant from RSI, the inventor of the Zip Flex rescue saw, a very important piece of equipment.
Zip Flex?
Zip Flex.
Telephone?
Dude, taking the phone in the middle of the show.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Jesus.
And you think you could have something a little better, like, you know, Tony Stewart or Jeff, you know who, hitting the wall.
Jeff Gordon hitting the wall? They can't make a wall for that guy to hit now.
I'm telling you.
What about Junior, man? I swear to God.
Well, you know what was going to happen.
But yeah,
it
but,
was going to happen.
His dad went in 7 times, Daytona 500, guys dying, all this kind of stuff, the war, everything going on. And the main focus this weekend on CNN, MSNBC, whatever, ESPN, 2, 3, 4, 5, Espanol, Germany, Dutch, whatever you want, was Junior. It was all Junior. All Junior, all day, all the time.
He left. He left. We knew it was going to happen.
Well, he didn't leave yet.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still running, had a good run. Got busted. Got busted for cheating this weekend.
Right.
Junior.
Whoa, what happened?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear
you know that.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Oh, yeah. Illegal brackets on his wing on the COT car.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. They're talking his cousin, Tony, going to be gone for a while.
First it was
crew
wall
chief.
Trip.
Yeah.
Now it's Little Lee.
Oh, yeah. But he had a top 10 finish this weekend, so that was good. But, I mean, and you'd think in the world of sports this week, all the talk would be about Roger Clemens coming back to the Yankees.
You'd think.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
I'd go up there and see him he's going to be expected to come to the Devil Rays Stadium this summer.
Right. Yeah. He'll pitch for that.
Yeah.
But because they don't do well at Tampa Stadium at the Dome. But no.
That or Barry Bonds.
Sports talk, all DEI, all Junior.
That's Rome burning.
Yeah. Yeah, Rome had some things to say about it. He didn't get him on the show. But you know, one thing I noticed this week when they were doing interviews with Junior? His head looked bigger. His head looked bigger. For some reason,
is that some kind of editorial comment?
Because he had the helmet on.
No, maybe he's on steroids.
Oh, my God. Do you think that would help a race car driver?
I don't know. It could. It's performance enhancing, right? Junior's on roids.
Wow.
His head's big.
Mm.
Anyway, enough of that nonsense.
It's absolutely amazing. Wouldn't it? I mean, that's just too bad. Here you had this Erin Crocker, less than 6 laps from being the first female in ARCA Remax history to win a race, man. She got past 5 laps to go.
No, she got that ride, right?
No.
You don't?
No.
You don't know whose car that is?
No.
Ray Everham.
Oh, okay.
Her boyfriend.
Driver development.
Her boyfriend.
That's his girlfriend?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, no. Oh, no. There's a lot.
You really follow this stuff,
oh, yeah.
Don't you?
There's a lot of people pissed off at Everham Motorsports.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
You really do follow
and
this stuff.
So who passed her with 5 laps to go?
Probably not an Everham car.
I was going to say. if he knows what's good for her.
Right. Oh, yeah. They've been hooked up for a while. And a lot of people in the Everham Motorsports, some of the developmental guys that have been skipped over. So Erin could drive?
Things that make you go,
That's another moment of silence.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So what else is new? What else is new in the world of sports? I'll tell you what, it was pretty
Danny
cool.
Martin, Danny Martin Jr. winning his first race, first TBRA race.
Absolutely.
I think that's the first race he's won in Florida in a long time. I know it's the first race he's won at DeSoto. What a fashion to win it in, man. Over DJ Holzel.
Yeah, wow. Another rookie.
Yeah.
A rookie.
A real rookie.
I don't think Danny's a rookie because he's
not. No, Danny's not a rookie.
He's run more than 5 races.
He's been around.
Danny's a.
Well, he's run more than 5 TBRA.
Well, he's
races.
Ran TBRA for like 3 or 4 years now, too.
Yeah.
But he did really good. Three laps left to go, passed him. Throttle stuck going when he took the checker flag. Banged into the wall. We were supposed to have him on tonight, but
he waited until after the race was over to
race. I think his bell's still ringing.
Yeah.
Wow. He was mad. How fast
did
was
you
he
see
going?
That?
Full blast.
Full blast into where? And it ran into turn?
Yeah, he hit the
throttle.
He got it so it was sideways into the wall. It wasn't head on.
You know, how many times have we seen, speaking about safety now, how many times have we seen cars with a throttle stick?
It happens all the time.
And, Roush invented a piece of equipment to stop that.
Well, we're going to get into that safety stuff here in a
little
bit.
The loop? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, more than that. It's a three-part system because I interviewed him. I interviewed Roush at St. Augustine when he was there.
Well, that's
we were doing
good.
A race.
Good. Do you have notes
you
for
have
that?
You have tape from that?
Yeah, right here.
You know, I see. There's another thing I thought. I see these guys that do other radio shows and stuff, and they got microphones and all this stuff. They're at the races and they're doing interviews, but I never hear the interviews. I really like to hear the interviews that they're doing with these people.
Well, some people just collect the interviews.
I think most of them just collect the frickin' pictures.
Really?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about writing tonight a little bit, too. Our motorsports writers.
Oh, don't give me a...
Motorsports media.
Here we go.
Writers.
I'm telling you.
Here we go.
$20.
Tough breed. Tough job.
It's got to be tough. Fine kettle of fish. We could be a kettle of fish. We're kind of like a bucket of fish that somebody's standing above with a shotgun.
Uh-huh.
You know, let's get this one.
Later on tonight on the show, we're going to have...
Come get some.
He's dead. We were going to have him on, but somebody shot the son of a bitch. So, anyway, we're going to have the old codger is going to join us. You know who the old codger is, right?
Barker.
John Barker.
Oh, my God. Barker. Is he still around?
There's only one John Barker.
There's only one. I've known him for
a while. Well, he's going to talk to us. He's going to tell us the definitive. He's going to give us the definitive bottom line deal on motorsports
writing. Why did they close the San Antonio Speedway?
Why?
Yeah.
They probably tried to run Rick Day out of town again.
Ooh. Boy, you know that guy.
Rick, call us. Call us, Rick.
Poor Rick. 941-748-3490. We want to know why San Antonio Speedway is closing.
Doesn't matter where you are in the country.
We're just kidding with you. We're just kidding with you, Rick.
The tire revenue?
I hope he comes back to Florida.
He will.
I really do. I hope. Yep. I told Bobby Deal, you should hire that guy, man. Get him to come back.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Day and night.
You know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to start a whole new thing here on Real Racing USA.
We're going to start more shit?
All Harley drags.
Ooh. Yes, sir.
Special segment every week on the All Harley drags. These guys who race Harley Davidson motorcycles at over 200 miles an hour. Now, we had...
Mike Ferris
on our show before,
I figured out where I knew Mike from. He put a roof on my business that I had one time.
That's cool.
When I had a shop,
that's cool. He wasn't going 200 miles.
He owned
an hour.
Quality roofing.
So in a couple of weeks they're having a big event up later this month at Commerce, Georgia, and we're going to have the winners from that race and events.
IHRA got motorcycles. They don't have motorcycles.
No, we used to. We used to race the Nitro Harleys.
Yeah.
With and Nitro Harley.
That's what these guys run, is Nitro.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one of the classes they have. And
that's what Mike runs.
Right.
And I saw a video online one
he's
time.
He's retired at the moment. Though.
Mike is?
Well, he sold his bike and moved up to Georgia or something.
Really?
Let me tell you what. These guys are insane.
I watched a guy lose an arm with a piston out the side of
Mike
one of the blocks.
Mike was in here several. Mike was on
the very first show we ever had.
Actually, this is amazing. The very first show that we ever did, and you may not remember this, and I'm not sure if you were there for the very first show.
He wasn't. Not for
the very
first.
Okay, the very first show we did.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was. He was in the studio.
The very first show we did in 2000 down there at the Pure Radio on AM 590 or whatever it was. 1490 The Pier. The very first show, the very first guest was Nitro Harley Davidson bike driver Mike Ferris.
There you go.
Amazing.
There you go.
Remarkable.
So now we're going to do that every half an hour of our segment every week.
Awesome.
All Harley drags, man.
We got it. We got to send out the healing vibes to Carol Wicks.
Yes.
Carol Wicks is the biggest race fan all of Florida.
Number one race fan.
Big hello to Carol. And
bless you, Carol. We hope you get better real soon.
Yep, definitely.
Ain't no doubt about it. Another moment. That was our third moment of silence.
We didn't want a moment of silence there, man.
We needed a moment. We need a moment.
So anyway, maybe some people don't know why we're going to be talking about writing today, Jack.
Maybe they know. Why are we? Actually, we talk about it all the time.
Right.
We do talk about it a lot.
Well, yeah.
It's a
some of us do it every week.
The people who do a lot of writing in motorsports, I talk to people, of course you do too, all over the country who do this sort of thing. And we always are sharing notes and sometimes commiserating about the lack of dignity and respect that oftentimes comes with the territory.
Every once in a while we talk about going on strike. Never do. 941-748-3490.
There's too many scams.
You know there isn't. Nobody else is going to do it.
Hey, wait a minute. I need to get my – I'm going to have my free dinner. Where's my $20?
We're also going to be talking tonight to Travis.
We let you in for free.
Travis Reynolds.
Damn.
That's right. You got in for free.
Yep. Damn.
Travis Reynolds, who is the media and public relations director for the IHRA, is going to join us.
Cool.
Steve Letemp, who is the announcer.
Staging Stevie. Hot Rod. Hot Rod, bring him to the lanes.
Hey, there you go. Damn. See, you should have a sound effect that goes with that.
Craig.
Don't push it.
You're missing your calling.
Telling you.
Don't push it.
So what are we going to do first?
Skip Wall. Skip Wall. We'll be going in later on tonight.
Skip Wall, yeah. Skip Wall's going to talk to us about the Hooters Pro Cup, and he might also have some chiming in to do about writers because he's one of those fledgling.
Man, I went to Tallahassee this past weekend. You talking about smoky. It's nasty up there, man.
This is the worst it's been since, I think it was 2001 or 2002. Remember when half of Volusia County burned to the ground?
Right. Yeah.
This is the worst it's been since then.
I had tickets to that Daytona race. They canceled because of it. It was the first July night race.
Yeah.
And we ended up running it in October.
Yeah. And that was in July. This is way earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dry. It's very dry here. But, you know, that's part of what we do. I mean, Florida's like that.
Uh-huh.
Believe me, we'll have more water in a couple of months than we ever wanted to have. So, Craig, why don't we take us to break here, and we'll come back with and get this machine started.
Sounds like a winner.
Okay.
I'm Gary LaPlante, owner of the Florida Suncoast Outlaw Street Dodge.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to Sprint Car driver Greg Lynn and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you.
Turn to the power of Short Track America Motorsports Entertainment, Carnac.com, for all local and national racing news from all over the world.
That's Carnac, Carnac.com.
Carnac.com.
Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. All You Can Eat Buffet Inventor.
Mr. All You Can Eat Buffet Inventor.
You've given us the real American dream. A tray, 15 feet of food, and a little sign that says, Go nuts, buddy.
Pinch me, I'm dreaming.
Pushing side dish innovation to its limits, you offer creamed everything and 400 flavors of gelatin.
Feed it frenzy.
If there's beef, you'll chip it. If there's chicken, you'll fry it. And if there's gravy, well, then everything's going to be okay.
Thank God for the gravy.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, buffet boy. You know the way to a man's heart and a few hundred tasty ways to challenge it.
Mr. All You Can Eat Buffet and Banter.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Fort Collins, Colorado.
Hi, I'm Paulie Milam, driver of the number 42 sprint car at East Bay and TBARA. You're listening to Short Track America with Bill Green, Jack Smith, and Rick Angies.
And we're back at Real Racing here. And who do we have on the line right now? We have Travis Reynolds. Travis, you there?
Hey, guys. I am here. How we doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent.
Just so everyone knows, Travis is the public relations director for the IHRA, which is we get to see each other at every national event. And tell us a little bit about your position there. You're in charge of all communications.
Yeah, you know, I'm the media guy. I work the events, work with the local media at the tracks, you know, TV stations, newspaper, radio stations, help line up interviews, help schedule things, make things easier on the media, and you know, just help spread the word about the IHRA Nitro Jam series.
Craig, I think he also keeps things in order at the track and runs off renegade photographers in places they're not supposed to be.
Right, the ones that don't get their vests like they were supposed to.
Hi, Travis. This is Jack Smith. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Yes, that does happen on occasion. That's right.
Well, and you have to keep order at an event like that. And that's why it's an important job to keep track of everything and make sure that the fans really get a feel for what is going on and you know, get rid of any rumors and accurately report the facts, if you will.
Absolutely. You know, it's really important what we do, and Craig, you know just as much as anybody else about you know, the safety aspects of everything. So it's definitely important.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I was up at the I met you up at the North Carolina event up at Rockingham, and that was a really great event. We had a wonderful time there. It was the first major drag racing event I had been to, covering, you know, spending most of my time covering stock car racing for the last 10 years. When is your next event? Where is your next event, and what can fans expect there?
Well, you know, the next event is it's May 25th through the 27th. It's called the Skullshine Sooner Nationals in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And you know, you saw the show in Rockingham, and fans are going to see a similar one. What's going to be really unique about this event is IHRA, and actually national event, an event of this status hasn't been in Tulsa in, you know, 15, 20 years. So it's a really neat opportunity for us, a great chance for fans to come out and see the 320 mile per hour nitro cars, like the Top Fuel dragsters, the nitro funny cars. Then we'll also be running the other professional categories, pro modified, alcohol funny car, and pro stock, as well as you know, a number of other classes in our semi pro categories, which draw on some of the best you know, some of the best local semi pro racers in the area, and you know, really you'll have racers coming from any state, throughout the country, from Canada. It's really just a neat gathering, and fans will definitely see some great drag racing that weekend.
Travis, what's the history of Tulsa? I know way back when it used to be a pretty jumping facility there.
Yeah, it was. You know, back in the day, they hosted, I believe it was the Summer Nationals there. And actually, I was talking to Mark Thomas, who was one of our alcohol funny car racers, actually our defending world champion. And he raced there. He's been racing with IHRA for over two decades. And he raced there, you know, back in the days. And he said it's known as a really great track, a really great facility. The fans are really excited to have this event returning. We've had some smaller events in Tulsa in the recent years. They've done really well, so you know, we're pretty excited to get into the marketplace and show the Oklahoma fans what IHRA Nitro Jam is all about.
And tell the fans also what it takes for a track or facility to host a national event. As far as you know, what preparations do they need to make? It's not all tracks can host a national event.
Right. Well, the key or the main component, or at least it has been for a number of years, which you know we've learned it might change soon. But is that you know you have to be able to host the race on the quarter mile. Some tracks can only hold 8 mile races. So first of all, it's got to be a quarter mile track.
We found that out in Texas.
What's that?
We found that out in Texas.
That's right. And that you know what we found is that. You know what we did in Texas was we had to go down to the eighth mile and a lot of people are talking about it and it really could change things. But you know the tracks have to you know the safety measures have to be taken. There has to be so much shutdown room, good guard walls, just good track conditions. In addition, you know there are other things that take place. You have to have good stands for all the spectators, the accommodations, restrooms, concession stands, and also for the drivers that are there that weekend, they have to have a good spot to pit. So, you know, you have to have a lot of land, you have to have a lot of good land, and you have to have a great racetrack. And we're told that Tulsa does really have a really nice racing surface. One of our, actually, a couple of our track guys are out there this week, just taking a look at the facility and going over some things, and they said that surface is a really good one. We should see some really great times.
What's the deal about that there might be changes? What was that, Craig? I missed that.
No, we had in San Antonio, we had to run the eighth mile, but that's because of issues we had with the track surface.
Oh, I see.
And it's the first time, Travis, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the first time in history for an IHRA event.
It's the first time in, especially in modern day history that we've ran an eighth mile event, especially we've changed a quarter mile event to an eighth mile event.
For a national event.
What was the problem with the track?
It's coming apart. 600 feet past the halfway point.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
It was pretty trying weekend. It was a tough decision to make. You know, here we are in the middle of qualifying and we make this discovery and it's like, well, do we cancel the race? Do we send everyone home? What do we do? And I think at the end of the weekend, you know, a lot of people were applauding. You know, I would love to say I made the decision, but obviously it wasn't me. But, you know, a lot of people were applauding the decisions made by the IHRA. So it was a good move. And like I said, when you race on the eighth mile, and Craig, you can probably expand upon this, but eighth mile versus quarter mile, since it's a little bit shorter, you have less safety concerns, you know, just it's a lot of people are looking into it as maybe a thing for the future.
Well, and, you know, parts contrition, and as far as the pro cars, you know, because they're shutting it off, they're just basically going on and off, and as opposed to, you know, stretching it out for the quarter. So they don't go through as many parts. It's easier on the cars, you know, but in that particular instance down there, most of them, you know, ran their normal pass like they would, even though the contest, if you will, the race was at, you know, for the eighth mile.
Right.
So past the eighth mile, if they wanted to stay in it all the way through the quarter, and, you know, some of them just kept going because that's what they're used to. But
oh, so you mean there's a thing of maybe going to this sort of thing more often?
Well, that I think that was a talk, wasn't it, Travis?
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion in the
speculation.
You know, in the drag racing world, with the media, with, you know, with even, I know I've seen columns by, you know, different people just talking about eighth mile racing. So, you know, it's being discussed, I know that.
Travis, this is Rick Angies. How did you get into the media end of it?
Well, actually, it all started with a college internship, and I had an internship as the PR guy at a local track up here in Ohio. And, you know, just it all started there, and then eventually was able to get a job with the IHRA in the communications department, and that kind of started me off. The company, IHRA, was going through a, you know, it was early stages of a restructuring almost of the company, new management, new ownership, and it gave me the opportunity to come in and you know, basically fresh out of college and really learn a lot about the sport as well as, you know, how to work in the media world and be you know, do the things that a public relations person has to do.
So you basically got hired by a track, a local track?
Yeah, it was a local track. You know, it was a college internship. And, yeah, I mean, it basically all started there.
So, Travis, when you go to the track on race day, what's a typical day like for you?
Typical day, it starts pretty early. You know, we'll get there as early as 7, 8 a.m. and just open things up. And one of the most exciting things I do all day is make the first pot of coffee. And that's, but, you know, anything from the simplest task to, you know, to whatever needs to be done. But usually what happens is, you know, as the media starts coming, as they're coming to cover the race, make sure they're getting the proper results. If they need to go out and interview one of the drivers, I go out with them and, you know, make introductions, typically we'll bring, like, the winners or the number one qualifiers for the night. We'll bring them up into the press room and conduct interviews in front of the media. And the night usually ends, if all thing goes right, we're out of there by 9 or 10 o'clock at night, but sometimes it can get late. I basically get to hang out at the track all day, which is pretty cool.
And do you basically find, as the media guy, you're probably one of the last people to leave, right?
Yeah, usually one of the last people to leave, although I guess as the media guy, sometimes you get to sneak in a little bit late, too, so that's not so bad.
You never sneak in.
Well, I guess you just ride in honking the horn and let everybody know you're coming, hey, I guess, then. I'm not going to sneak.
For the fans that don't realize what goes on up in the media room there in the tower, I think when I introduced you to Jack up there, it's like a virtual city of laptops. And their whole job up there is to get the word out through the internet and post the results, and they're like instant results.
Right. Yeah. I mean, with today's you know, all the technology, it's, you know, they've got the wireless internet up in the tower, and yeah, I mean, those guys bring in their laptops, tap into the internet, and right, it's those results. We have a company, actually Summit Racing Equipment, through a relationship with them. We have our racing results literally, minutes after a car goes down the track, the results are up on the website. So people at home can follow it. And yeah, that's what happens in the media room. There's all these different journalists, writers, reporters up there filing stories, posting things to websites. And it's all, you know, like I said, everybody has their laptop and they're busy working away. And, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty neat what goes on up there. It's, you know, a lot of the fans don't really get to see it, but it's pretty neat.
Oh, it's a tremendous amount of work. We were, over at Volusia County Speedway earlier this year, and we were meeting with the media folks that, handle the World of Outlaws. And it was very similar to what your setup is up there. You know, it's just intense, nonstop activity trying to get accommodate all the media and take care of it all. It's a big job.
Absolutely. And Jack, the race you were at, Rockingham, it's right there in NASCAR country, so we always, you know, we always get a lot of media attention down there. It's a great market to have a drag race at.
Yeah, can't wait to go back up. We're going to go back up to the race up there this fall, or It's fall for us. Might be winter for them folks. But
well, we're hopefully going to get you to a couple more in between.
Yeah, maybe. You never know.
Yeah, Jack, we'd love to have you. You're always welcome, and just make sure you get that photo vest.
I normally don't take photographs. Normally, I have people at racetracks or whatever doing the photographs, and I walk around taking snapshots. And frankly, I really didn't think I would have the courage to stand that close.
It was hysterical to see him standing next to a 7,000 horsepower top fuel dragster doing a burnout, trying to take a picture. That was funny.
Yeah, that's one of the, Jack, you can probably attest to that. It's when you get that close, even if you're just in the stands, when you're there live in person seeing these cars, it's so powerful and intense. You have to go to see it and witness it.
Yeah, the only thing I could even, you know, we went over and watched the space shuttle launch from the Cape earlier this year, and or last year, late last year, I guess it was. But that's the only thing I could even remotely relate that feeling to. It was very, very intense.
Well, I've never witnessed one of those, but I can imagine that being pretty powerful.
It's close.
That really tells people what it's like, sure.
Yeah, it turns your body inside out somehow or another.
You pound your chest, and the heat from the flames coming out of the... of course, you know, and that's another reason you have the vest is for safety.
Sure.
Because when you're
absolutely
that close, there's a lot of improvements that have happened over the years in safety for those engines. Because
the vest is going to save your ass.
I need some Kevlar.
His flak jacket, Jack's flak jacket.
Yeah, so it's great having you on with us tonight, Travis. We're going to talk to Steve LaTemp here in a little bit, too, about some upcoming things, and that should be interesting.
Well, great, guys. I appreciate it, and tell Stevie I said hey.
We sure will, Travis. Appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk to you soon. See you
in
Tulsa.
Guys.
So, yeah, that's Travis. I see him at every event along. He's usually tagging not far behind Mike.
I want to know what the hell the vest is going to do.
It's to save him. It's so we can identify him.
It's so he can be identified.
When he's down on the ground, it says...
Trust me.
They put little numbers on the back
yes,
or something.
Yes,
the same thought occurred to me.
They have numbers on them, and it says photo.
Here's your vest.
I was down there in an area where you were supposed to have a vest on. I'd been told to have a vest on, but I was only going to be there for a minute.
All right, let me put it in perspective. It's like the modern-day toe tag, but it's a vest tag.
It's a trunk tag.
It's the trunk tag. The body tag.
Take us to a commercial.
Yeah, absolutely.
Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. CJ Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development Construction Company in Tampa at 813-202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development and Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call. Evergreen!
CarKnight.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarKnight.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarKnight.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, CarKnight gets it done.
A new concept in driver and team promotion has begun.
McAllister Sports Management and CarKnight.com have combined to bring you the ultimate in motorsports marketing. Nothing beats winning, but it does nothing for you or your team if not promoted to the correct group of individuals. Together, Jack Smith and Scott McAllister have over 35 years' experience in the Florida racing industry and have developed a program to meet all your marketing needs, including custom design websites, professional and prompt press releases, audio-visual presentations and distribution, autograph cards, logo design, and media skills development. Achieve the exposure you need to catch the attention of potential sponsors and race team owners in a unique and professional style. No stale websites or cookie-cutter press releases. We analyze your needs and tailor each project and program to your specific goals. Call 352-804-0078 or log on to
McAllisterSportsManagement.com.
Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Truly the long arm of the law at the movie theater. You and a velvet rope are all that keep the huddled masses from a free flick.
You're the man now.
Ever vigilant, you boldly demand to see our stub. Getting a little personal, don't you think?
Can I see your stub?
Who's the guy in the military-style uniform that would make any third-world dictator proud? Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper. That's who.
Salute the general.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Stubmaster, because you really tear it up.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Bud You're playing it again.
We're
playing
Real Men of Genius.
You're fired.
Not you.
Not Jack,
you.
We're
not
back.
You. Real Racing USA.
Oh, this is real. This is
live
real.
From 2505 Manatee Avenue East.
East, State Road 64.
Snook
East.
River Grill.
And what's the phone number?
941-748-3490. But it happens that we have somebody on the line right now.
Oh, yeah?
Who's a very, very good friend of Jack's.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, look, when you want information, you want to go to the expert in that field.
Yep.
Okay?
The veteran expert.
Veteran expert. So there's been some, you go ahead and explain it, Rick.
What do you want me to explain, Jack? Like I said, there's you know, 6, 7, 8 of us, maybe 10 in the whole state of Florida that write race reports, that report on racing, drivers and stuff. There just happens to be one guy that's done it longer than any of us, and he's with us right now, John Barker. How you doing, John?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing real good. John, you know, a lot of discussion this week about race reports and writing and stuff like that, and a lot of people take it for granted.
Well, yes, they do. There's always a secret. A man that accepts a job has got to be willing to do it, and he's got to like racing, or he doesn't belong writing about auto racing. Sending just any everyday reporter just doesn't get it. It has to be somebody that knows the track, knows the drivers, but there's so many things that go into it. Let me just a quick synopsis that I can give you.
You take
gasoline
your time,
right,
John.
Now is $3 a gallon, all right? So when you go travel from track, let's say you live a half an hour away. Well, you've tied up an hour there. Then you got about a five-hour show, 5.5 hours when you watch a show. So that's 6 hours. Then it takes another good 3 to 4 hours, and in some cases 5 hours to write a story. So you're investing 11 hours of your time to do it. Now, that is if when you go to the racetrack, they got a list of all the drivers, their sponsors, their car numbers, what they've done in the past, what kind of champion. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of research if you're going to do the story right. Everybody wants to give a different opinion of what happens. And auto racing is one of the toughest to do from the standpoint of making something technical out of something that should be more of a driver knowledge thing and knowing the person, where they pass on the track. And unless you've got the score sheets from the track, which makes it the simpler way to do it, you can tell who does what to who and when it happened and blah, blah, blah. But most tracks aren't willing to share that with the writer to start with. It's very difficult to get that. But I'm saying that, when people go and write stories, they better be ready to put in 11 and 12 hours to do one story.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people really don't get that. I mean, they think you get, you know, when you go as a writer myself that I've been doing it for a long time, you know, they think, well, you're going to the races. You get to go to the races and watch the races. What they don't realize is we're not really watching the race.
No. And if you're doing it, the only thing that when somebody does it for a program, a racing program, they're kind of like geared to writing a PR story.
Exactly.
You've got to know what you want in that story. You got to make sure that you get somebody that's local, that you can highlight. There's so many things you have to do. It's not that simple of a deal. And like you said earlier, people take it for granted that everybody knows, and that's just not true.
Now, we've found that absolutely. I mean, I've helped probably, I don't know, a half dozen to a dozen people get started in writing. I've been involved in Karnak and motorsports media now for 10 years. prior to that, I had about 25 years of experience writing for all sorts of things, including publications for which I got paid for. And I'll tell you, I never found anything so hard to write about and do it properly and not piss people off as in writing race reports.
Because they change. It changes quick as when they start. It changes when they end.
Well, yeah,
and it's something that you have to know about. And people have to understand the difference of one thing. When you write a race story about the race itself, you got to deal with facts. When you write an auto racing column, you can interject your opinions, but still, you have to be smart enough to be able to support what you write. And so many people don't know that. And they end up in a PR campaign to try to take care of their drivers, and they end up in trouble. Because they're not public relations people.
Exactly. When you're trying to write a race report, you have to stay as neutral as possible to up to 30 drivers out there on the racetrack that are going around, and all kinds of things are happening at one time.
Right.
And like if you write a race report that you get down technical, you skip one thing, or maybe you added a driver passing one time before, you'll catch hell.
That's right. And it's the same way when you write about issues. Like you write about a speedway and you tell the general public what you've been told, and after you tell them what you've been told, then the person from the track will dispute he even told you about it. And some of them won't even get back with you. So, you know, I've been through all that. You know, I put my books away. I put all my clippings, and I've saved a lot of them. You stop to think about it. I used to write 48 auto racing columns a year. A year. And I used to write stories every Saturday night, and it appeared in the paper Sunday. And what I did on Friday night would appear in the paper on the following day. So it's something that, you know, you've got to do. And it's always best to do it from your last memory of what happened. And not everybody is going to agree with what you said. And writers sometimes take that so bad, and that's when they try to be a PR delegate, and they're not. They're a writer. You're going to take some heat. If you don't like the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Yeah, if you're not willing to take the heat, then you're in the wrong business.
You're in the wrong business, especially when it comes to being a writer in auto racing.
Exactly.
You know, you say the wrong.
Most of the things I wrote about have happened, and they happened, and sometimes I really didn't want to see them happen, but I sure wasn't going to hold it back from the public when I found something else.
Hey,
if I found out that somebody, some driver, lied to me, my old saying used to be, you go out in that racetrack and you run an exceptionally good race, I'm going to write about you. You do something wrong, I'm going to talk about you. So there's a difference in how you handle each individual story. I enjoyed it. I got involved in 1987, did it for 18 years. I know what it's about. I enjoyed it. I know.
Speaking of talking about people, we know about that, don't we, Mr. Barker? This is This is Craig Clark. How you doing?
Good.
Good. We've been in a few hot situations, haven't we?
Well, it's come up a little warm at times. you gotta be willing to take off your sweater and be able to handle the pressure that you're going to get from certain people who wanted it written a different way. My driver would never do that. That's a lot of times the answer you get. You have people in the stands. I'm going to tell you how bad it is. I never used to like press box. I always like to usually sit in the grandstand, behind the flag stand. And I'll never forget that. I was sitting there one day, and some woman behind me says, that car is illegal. I says, it is. I said, how do you know that? She said, I can tell just the way it sounds. So that's sometimes how badly the public perceives something, because they don't like a particular driver. And we all have people that we like to write about and drivers that we talk about, but I'm going to tell you what, as long as it fits the story and it's done in the proper perspective, giving the points of view. So many times now, people in the track management sector prefer not to talk about it. And, you know, that's a problem.
Well, and, you know, and that brings up another point. You've been doing this. You were involved in media for at least 20 years or so, and have you seen that perhaps the promoters may not give as much credence to the writers as maybe they deserve in terms of its?
Well, no, I don't really see that. What I see is a lot of promoters would rather not be things written so they don't tell you nothing. You know, the funniest experience, and I can go back through all the stories I've ever written, I made my trip out to New Smyrna Speedway to see a race. Somebody says, you got to go there and watch this big show they got. So I went to that show, and, you know, I really enjoyed it. Well, when it was over with, I walked down to meet with the late Clyde Hart, and I met him over in the building where he sat. And they let me in there after, you know, because he was paying, carried his money in a big leather briefcase. And he said, well, what's he want? And they said, he's a reporter, wants to talk to you. Well, I already was told that, you know, that Mr. Hart would have you for lunch, depending on what you wrote. But I went in and I talked to him, and it was a good meeting. Well, to make a long story short, I went back 2 weeks later. They had a 100-lap race, and it involved weight models. And everything that could go wrong went wrong. Officials, drivers, crash crew. I mean, if it could go wrong, it did. So after the race, I'm coming back over to see him again, and he stopped me to before I even got over there. He says, well, what did you think of the race tonight? And that's like one of them. You've got to give that quote to a track owner of what you thought of it, or what you wanted to say and what you didn't want to say. And I hadn't completely made up my mind what I was going to write, and I looked at Clyde Hart right in the eye, and he says, what do you think? And I says, well, I'll tell you one thing for sure, Mr. Hart. And he says, what's that? He says, you've got the best lemonade I ever had at any racetrack. It was like getting rid of this huge problem because I didn't know at that time what I was going to write. I wanted to go home and think about it.
Dang, that was some good lemonade.
But not everybody is fair. Not every promoter wants the press unless they know that the press is going to say something positive for them. And that's where we get into that public relation image as a writer. And it's a mistake to do that. You don't write because the promoter said this guy is fine. You don't write it that way. You might go in there, and I mean, I spent some nights 5 and 6 hours. I spent nights where the sun was coming up the next day because they had a teardown on a race car. You know, so your job isn't necessarily done. It depends on how far you want it to go. So it's not that easy of a thing, and you can't make yourself an easy pick. You can't make yourself a cheap person where you don't take anything to do the story. And then you put it on paper, and it's not really what happened, because if you think you're in trouble by making an error in a newspaper story, make one in a program.
Oh, no doubt.
Make one in a PR letter.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you something, you're going to get hung.
Yeah, you make one on it on a story that appears on the Internet, it can be quickly changed and fixed and corrected. Not so easy to do when it goes into print.
You get that weekly program, and I got one in one every week. And,
Yeah, John, people do, on the other side of this coin, is people do have to start somewhere. I mean, a guy who or a girl who's going to start out to wants to get involved in writing motorsports, they do have to start somewhere. So
yeah.
Perhaps a program is you think that's a appropriate place to start?
It probably is, because if you're doing a program, you're doing it as a PR person at the racetrack. You ain't doing it for yourself. If you're making money for putting a program out and you're selling a program, it's got to be acceptable for what people like, or they ain't going to read it to start with. And when you start out selling 1,000 programs, and then one day you decide to kick it up to 2,000, and you come back and you only sold 400, you know you got a problem.
Yeah, well, if there's a track around the short track that could sell 1,000 or 2,000 programs a night, they're doing pretty darn good.
Hell yeah.
it's no easy deal. You can't do it too cheap, and you can't overprice yourself on the market. It's really simple. You know, and if you overstep yourself and you don't get it in the right places, you're making a mistake. I send my stories out now that I do periodically for a certain drivers, and I send it into the internet, and it's probably on, oh, I'm going to guess, 18 websites.
Oh, at least, yeah, right.
On the internet, including Karnak.
Exactly.
And then if you write to a newspaper, it's got to be written a different way. That's the other people don't understand that.
Exactly.
It's got to be done AP style. It's got to use the proper verbiage. You got to make sure that you're within the parameters of what the writing restrictions are. People just don't understand that.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we get literally hundreds and hundreds of news stories and press releases sent to Karnak every week. And as a matter of fact, I have one person now that it's all she's doing is editing this sort of stuff, because quite frankly, probably half or more than half of what we get would never pass the test at a newspaper because of improper spellings and improper use of verbs.
Well, that's why they make a spell check on a computer. You should use it 100% of the time. And they also have a grammar layout where you use the proper words to make a story up, and you don't, and you find yourself not in a position to where when you put something in the program and somebody's trying to read it, they can't figure out what you're doing.
Yeah.
But that's up to the professionalism of the person that sets it up. It depends on what he thinks. If he puts it in one way, sooner or later it's going to come back and bite him, because people aren't going to want to have it. It's the same way with the newspapers. The newspaper business is the same way. The numbers that I remembered from the ledger where I wrote was that 27%, okay, 27% of the general public read auto racing. That's a lot of people,
right,
considering you're putting out 75 and 76,000 papers on a daily basis,
yeah,
and over 150,000 on a Sunday basis.
Yeah.
So when you start saying that 27% are reading your story, that's not too bad. The only one that used to beat auto racing out was the University of Florida football team.
Why do you think now, though, that local racing isn't getting the coverage in the newspapers?
Because why do I think?
Yeah.
Because the experience that the paper's having in cost factors on adding, they're taking away a whole page. You got to remember, that's a lot of print.
Right.
You're taking that away, and you're probably taking away, I'm going to say, 16,000 words.
Uh-huh.
So it's gone. Then they took, and they downsized the size of the paper. Took a half inch off here and a half an inch off there, and saved thousands of dollars doing that. But there ain't very many places that can say they've got an auto racing writer that writes nothing but auto racing.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Ledger did that for 18 years with me, so I did it a long time. But there ain't a lot of papers that just have an auto racing writer. The auto racing writer sometimes has to cover three or four other sports besides auto racing.
Yeah.
A full-time writer has got to be ready to invest his time and his efforts in putting a story together and making sure that the proper results are there with what he did.
The last of a dying breed.
Well, yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. There's no doubt in my mind about that. People just are not interested in doing it anymore.
Right.
They want to be so technical when they write. People aren't interested in that. If a guy's got an illegal carburetor, you don't have to get in, it was a screw 8 out of screw B in the fourth segment and paragraph 7 in the rule book. People don't care about that.
I don't know.
They want to know if he had a legal carburetor. Right. It was illegal.
Yep. They DQ'd him for a carburetor.
But now, make the rest of it the story and the personality of the person in the race.
There you go.
Simple.
Exactly.
And I had over 450 people that were drivers in the state of Florida that I wrote about. So I had to pick something out for everybody I possibly could. If your name got mentioned, that was great. Some people didn't like it because they figured, oh, you're just writing about him. That's the only one you care about. Not true. The people that I wrote about were people that deserve the writing. And that's, I wrote a column, not a race report now, but a column, I used more and more of them every time I did it.
Exactly. Well, John, it was great having you on, man. Great to have a veteran like yourself to let the people out there know what exactly, you know, what it's like. Like, if I say it, I've only been doing it 5-10 years. But somebody like you that's been doing it, God, forever and damn good at it, they really
get to
hear.
That's why he's the old codger.
The old codger.
The old codger. Good old Johnny.
Thanks a lot, John.
You're right. Take care, guys.
Thank you, John.
John Barker.
Yeah.
Yep, known him for a long time.
So and let me tell you, where that came from got me in trouble, if you remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Called him the old codger. Yeah.
Okay,
you know, see, the thing is, that the thing about it is, you know, like, I can remember back not that long ago when, like, on it used to be TNT, now it's Spike TV. They had, every Sunday night, they had a race report show on. It covered ARCA, ASA, Hooters, I mean, all over the country of a big late model race. They had the top five, you know, and you don't got crap like that anymore. I mean, nothing. If it ain't NASCAR, they don't want to hear about it. Or IRL.
Jack, CBS is calling. You're fired.
Christ.
Wouldn't be surprised. That you? Somebody decided to pick up our number.
Jack Imus.
What were you going to say, Craig? What were you going to say before he was...
Jack Imus.
Oh, yeah.
You get in trouble.
Yeah, we get in trouble for writing.
No.
What do you got, Rick?
Okay. Got another veteran on. And he's been around. What?
That makes me feel really old.
Scotty Mack on the line.
Hey, Scott, how you doing, man?
I'm not as old as John Barker.
No, you're not as old as John Barker.
But
you know what? We've been doing it damn near as long as John Barker.
I tell you what, the day I can do it, if one tenth as good as that man can do it, I'll be doing it.
I'm telling you, man.
He's been doing it for a long time. He was the first person I ever saw on the racetrack.
So what's on your mind, Scott?
You know, listening to y'all talk about that, and, you know, we had spoke about this earlier in the week. I think that we're all correct. Everybody I've heard talking, especially from the IHRA press director, they started out at the local track. You know, that's how I started off. But I think the main thing that you have to do is a lot of people don't understand the commitment that you have to make. And really, you know, once you sign on to a deal like that, it really is something that is, It takes the majority of your time. I know when I went from doing it, you know, sometimes when I was at Ocala Speedway and then never when I was at Volusia County Speedway, and then all of a sudden I started doing a little bit at Bronson Motor Speedway, but when I started working for the Sarah Series, I mean, we started having to write press releases all the time, and back then, and I still do, I'll be the first to tell you, dude, I hate writing. I hate that part of it. Going to the track and, you know, having the fun time there, that's the good time. When you come back home, man, and you realize you got to write, you know, you got to spend some hours and some time, and it's like you said, you got to get this stuff right. And, you know, I learned that in college when I was going there. Yeah, you get a degree in public relations and corporate communications. You kind of understand that there's some fun parts to it, and there's some not so fun part to it. And, you know, if you don't know things like AP writing skills and some things like that, there's some places that won't even take your story when you send it in to them or your press release. So, you know, it's unless you know what you're doing, there's some places that, you know, you just want to make sure you're doing the right thing and that you can carry out the commitment that you sign up for. So it just gets tough in the long run. That was my main thing.
Well, you know, all this really started with a post on Karnak's message board asking for writers and then basically saying they were going to pay him $20 to start. And what really got me was that they were going to include a free pass to the racetrack and a pit pass as part of your pay. But when I responded to it, I really didn't mean to sound sarcastic, and I really didn't mean, you know, to be mean about it. I just wanted people to know that, you know, there's right now in the state of Florida, there's 6 or 7 of us that do this. And usually, if there's 6 or 7 of a certain amount of people that do a job in a whole frickin' state, they're usually pretty high-paid people.
Yeah. And, you know, and that was kind of depressing to me, too, when I see somebody put that in there, kind of like, dang, oh, man, I got to go get another job or something before we're getting down to.
But
it gets kind of depressing.
It's not that I think, you know, that I want, you know, to get gazillions of dollars for doing what I do. It's just that it's just like we're doing it and people read our stuff and it promotes racing in the state of Florida and it goes all over the country and sometimes all over the world. But there's, you know, it's just and it's not even the recognition of it. It's just that, like, we don't get any credit. Like, you know, we're just kicked to the curb, and we're supposed to do it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a lot of people just kind of expected you just, you know, kind of like, oh, you should just be happy for just being here. And these people don't realize that when you go home, you really do. I mean, I know I do because I have to. I'm not that good of a writer. I have to put my heart and soul into this thing. I have to drag my wife in there and say, you know, what does this sound like? And you know, you rewrite the same paragraph over and over again. And you take out this person's name because you don't want to offend them, but you want to make sure you get the story, you know, correct. Or, and it's just, it's a tough thing. And, you know, it is like John says, there's a difference from writing as a PR person. I've done both. I've written for tracks. I've written for PR people. I've written for newspapers. And every one of them require a different writing technique and a different writing style. And because of that, that's kind of what sets people apart. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I guess it's with everything. If somebody wants to, you know, if somebody wants to do that, they certainly can. You know, in this business, though, I've just learned a long time ago, and you'll hear me say this over and over again, when somebody says free, run. And
run like hell.
That's kind of what this is, you know. It's kind of like $20. Dude, I think what's going to happen is a lot of people are going to start doing this, and then they're going to realize about the third or fourth time. Man, it was like me, man, the first time I was doing it. It was fun, man. And the second time, it was kind of fun. And then the third and fourth time, I was going like, "Dadgum, man, I'm up till 4:30 in the morning writing this stuff. I just got home at 2:30. It's 4:30 in the morning, and I've just got two paragraphs out of here. Holy smoke!" So yeah,
I just worked 5.5 hours at the racetrack, and now I still got another 3.5 to 4 hours left to do of my job. That you know, I get paid okay, but. It's a full 8 to 12 hour day.
You know,
like you said, man, we're glad to do it, and I can't imagine doing anything else, to be honest with you. But you know, I've learned from, and that's doing it at the track. You know, when you start doing it, when you start doing press releases for drivers, like I've done in the past, you do a pre-race press release, you do a post-race press release. You have to find a reason to write press releases for your drivers. You have to find real reasons. I mean, you can't just start writing, you know, about drivers for no reason. So you have to somewhat invent a reason, invent a cause to write a press release. So you have to come up with a lot of ideas. It's not just writing down, you know, what you saw. You can do that, and sometimes I do who, what, when, where, and how.
Scott, that's a different kind of writing, too. When you're writing press releases for a driver, the real expertise comes in of, like what you said, of trying to decide what you're going to write about, because you got to have, you're trying to represent this guy and present the right image, and that's a whole different kind of writing. These guys that write race reports on a regular basis, and I do it probably twice a month, sometimes more often, probably twice a month. I used to do it a lot more often. It's very, very difficult, and I tell you, guys like Dave Westerman, who's the guy at our friend John Harney up at North Florida Speedway,
yep.
Larry McMillan at Citrus County Speedway.
That asshole down at DeSoto.
Yeah.
That jerk down at DeSoto. But these guys absolutely are amazing. Those guys can do this. What they're announcing the race. I'll tell you another one. Larry Jewett at East Bay Raceway. These guys are announcing the race, and somehow within a matter of an hour, couple hours after the races are over, they've got a 1,000 to 1,500 word story.
I envy those guys.
It is amazing. I cannot do that. It takes me 2 or 3 hours because I approach it from a different perspective than they do.
Man, I'm pulling my hair out. It's an awful thing.
It's difficult.
And you can't have any.
For Larry Jewett, he spits them out, man.
And you can't have interruptions and stuff because you have to focus on every little detail to try and put that together.
You got to try and remember that quick.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Read your notes from the racetrack, you know, where you were walking around the pit, and you know you were sweating on them because it was hot all day long, and you'd been there since 5:30 in the morning. You know, when the gate
and you can't
up,
get
you're in a different city, and
you can't get an angle. You can't get an angle for the story. I've done this so many times. I'll go to Lakeland, and I've done. I know what's happened, like practice on Friday or something for a Saturday race, and you kind of have a storyline that you think is going to develop.
And the guy goes out the second lap of the race.
Yeah, I mean, your whole storyline is developed. You know what I mean? So you really can't.
Now where do I go?
Yeah,
because before a big race starts, you have to have anywhere from 2 to 12 different directions you're going to go.
Now, exactly. but there's this other kind of writer.
Not including in getting ready to announce it.
Exactly. But now there's this other kind of writer, which actually has brought us to even have, is the reason we're discussing this. And this is the kind of writer who sits at home drinking their six-pack of Budweiser, typing on their computer and telling track owners how to run their tracks, media people how to write their media, who don't have the dedication, who don't go out and work their butts off to get this stuff done, but they can spit out all of their writing without spell checking, without any regard to facts, without any regard to being anything. And that's all. That's the reason we actually are having this conversation.
I think that whoever the writer is does need to have some type of, you know, a real dedication and devotion. And then, you know, you need to get paid for your time. And that's really, you know, I'm sorry, but it's like I said today, especially in this business, I don't do anything unless somebody's going to pay me money to do it with. Because, you know, you'll go racing broke and you'll go racing poor in this business. And we all have, and we've all been there. And
because they'll damn sure let you do it for nothing for as long as you will.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and my deal is, hey, if you want a premium content, if you want some premium content written, then you really you have to pay me to do it, because ultimately I got to come home to my wife, man. You know, and she can say, you know, what have you been doing for the past 3 days? And if I say, you know, I didn't make any money, I was just writing stories about a race up in Op, Alabama.
But damn, they let me in the track for free.
Well, if you...
Yeah,
if,
exactly. Yeah, I got to go in for free. But you were gone for 3 whole days.
I got to watch the races.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that only goes so far. So I don't care how much you like the races. It really, you know, this business is a lot of... It is a lot about sacrifice. And my wife has sacrificed a lot. I've sacrificed a lot. But I got to do what I wanted to do. But it's somewhat of a selfish, you know, risk you have to take, because sooner or later... That you have to give devotion. It's like I said, you have to be there come rain or shine. If you look outside and it's raining, you think, damn, I wonder if it's raining over New Smyrna. I wonder if it's raining down in Bradenton right now. I remember when right before I was working in Bradenton, before you were there, when I was working there, I'd be going, gosh, is it raining down there? It never rained at John's track, man. It could rain everywhere else. I'd be going, God bless it. I could get in my car, drive down there. It's probably going to be rained out, but you got to go. You got to go. There's no not going.
And working for John, you could be there till 3 or 4 in the morning.
So,
And just like I said, John, dude, somehow his track is magical, and it doesn't rain there for some reason. It can rain everywhere but his place. And so it's just like I said, it's just a weird, you know, it's a weird job, but you have to be devoted to it. That's
so,
and if you're not devoted to stuff.
Scott, you could sum up what your philosophy then is: you get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for, brother. And like I say, when somebody says free,
run.
Okay, Scotty, could you do us a favor, man? Could you write us a little article for free about tonight's show, and just submit it whenever you get around to it.
We'll need that in the next 2 hours.
I'll write a story for it right now.
Scott, do it in triplicate, too.
Friend. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
You guys stick with it, man. Good job.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott. You know what else? What, real quick before we go. The other thing about doing writing is, and what people don't realize, drivers do it a lot, is when you hit that frickin' wall.
It's tough.
You hit that wall and it just ain't coming out.
Or when you hit the wall the other way, like Jane Smith recently did, she irritated some people off really bad, and she didn't mean to.
Not my girlfriend,
but
Jane.
But she did.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Shit happens.
Yeah.
Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. CJ Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development Construction Company in Tampa at 813-202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development and Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call. Evergreen.
McAllister Sports Management is a full-service firm specializing in all aspects of motorsports communications. Specific services include website development, program management, sponsorship acquisition and development, public relations, promotions, corporate hospitality, and strategic marketing. We can design, produce, and distribute autograph cards, feature stories, and arrange photo and video opportunities. We help you maintain a continuous contact with local, regional, and national media. For more information, log on to McAllisterSportsManagement.com or call
Yeah, Real Racing USA back on the airwaves.
941-748-3490. Live
from the
Snook River Grill, man.
About anything we're talking about?
That shrimp was great tonight.
Was it?
Oh, it was good.
Shrimp that she can't never find?
Yeah.
We will climb off our soapboxes.
Get off your pedestal, Rick.
Get off your six-pack. Pedestal.
Yeah, get off your six-pack, Rick. With his, hey, wait a minute. If you, for those that can't see...
That's why this show's not videotaped.
Rick's got his Larry the Cable Guy hat on.
Yes, he does.
What my bullshit thing?
Uh-oh.
Go ahead.
I done did it now.
All right, Craig.
All right.
Hey.
Before we go one step further, I just want to remind people, tomorrow, Wednesday, as usual, 8 p.m., the ASA Fast Lane. That's not funny. This is a very serious show.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Is that show ever live?
And
is that show ever live?
Yes.
Is it?
It is live. Orgy.
Is it live?
It's live when it happens.
Okay. Okay. I tried listening last
night. Let's...
I was going to have to feel things out.
Can you hear live?
No.
8 o'clock? Comes on 8 o'clock.
Oh, I must have been listening at a different time.
Yeah, it's live at 8 o'clock.
And what is it again, Jack?
The ASA Fastlane. It's Saturday night, by the way. Saturday night, live after the races.
Yes.
That was on last week with Bill Green, and I believe what we're doing here is we're revamping that show with some whole new gig, and this guy named T-Bone out of Kentucky.
Welcome back.
Yeah, T-Bone. Terry Wall is going to be moving forward with that show, and it's... And there's also a NASCAR show in the works from Short Track America that's going to be...
NASTY Car?
Yeah.
NASTY Car.
Yeah.
Well, be careful you don't use somebody else's logos, or God help you if you use somebody else's music.
You get sued?
Oh, for Christ's sake, yeah.
Oh, man, maybe we'll get on MSNBC or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh. Let's go talking about some safety. Mr. Clark?
Sir.
We have a guest in the house.
We sure do.
Why don't you introduce our guest and explain his credentials and so forth, and then let's get on talking about some safety.
All right.
Something really important.
I'll reintroduce him again. In the studio here with us, we have Keith Grant, the inventor of the ZipFlex rescue saw, which is a neat little tool, very simple, but it performs a very important job in our line of work when we have to get a driver out. With the, you're just speaking of NASTY Car with the new head surrounds they have and the Butler-built seats.
Right.
And tell us a little bit about how your product and how it came about was developed.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome.
Thanks a lot, guys. This has been pretty cool. Just watching this thing all unravel here, and it's pretty.
It does unravel. It really does unravel.
Oh yeah, it does.
Pretty cool here. Well. Let me just go back to one thing that Mr. Barker said about the Reuters having their job and not being able to watch the race.
Wait a minute. Let me get back up on my box.
Okay. Well, we can all get on a box here, that's for sure. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that when you pay the admission, you get into the stands, you're there to watch entertainment. Any other job function that makes the race go on is a job. And... whether it's, my crew chief of Pro Truck Series down here, been working on a Busch North team up north before I moved back down here a couple years ago, and we didn't go there to watch the race. We went there to work. I don't think I actually could tell you in many of these situations who either won the race or what position they did, except for the guy I was watching and how many wrecks he get into and all the other problems. So if you wanted to watch a race and you went there with a crew, you better watch somebody else's race because you're not going to be having a real good time watching your own. And along that same line, the track crew issue was the same kind of a problem. There are a lot of track crews across the country. The guys just show up at the track because they're given the $20 and the free hamburger and the free admission to watch the race. And that's pretty much the level of the track crew. And I know with Craig's operation with Track Rescue, and there's a few others across the country that got their act together. And I've been working with a lot of high-level teams with some rescue equipment we've been working on for a long time. It's interesting to see what's out there and what's not out there.
So,
and that's kind of how some of the tools get started, and one of the reasons was the ZipFlex, because it all started, I started building a backboard system for seats probably 20, 25 years ago, and it took a while.
cell phones are a wonderful
thing.
Thank
God for
vibrate
cell phones.
Vibrate doesn't mean vibrate.
Go ahead, Keith.
We started working when I was in the fire service up north. I retired as a professional firefighter and a little earlier than I wanted because of an injury. My wife wanted to move down here, so we moved down to Florida, and I took my racing experience up there and brought it down with me. And what we wanted to do was try and take some of the information that I developed in the fire service. Sorry, I'm trying to do two things here at once. Trying to take some of the things we worked on in the fire service as part of the technical rescue team when I was on, and the things that we worked on, plus the rest, the racing experience I had for a long time, and kind of combine the two together and design some tools that, and some training methods, et cetera, that was not being done anywhere. And it all started out with a backboard system I designed many, many years ago and started working with primarily Brian Butler at Butler Motorsports in Concord. And we did a lot of R&D over a long period of time and developed some really cool, good working relationship on that and bringing some stuff to the table for driver education that hadn't been done before. But because of customization of the seats and just so many issues being thrown up in the air and the different seat manufacturers, it was all over the map, and it was a real difficult problem. And it kind of culminated how the ZipFX got started with Jerry Nadeau's crash. And what was that, 2001?
Yeah, that was a tough
like
one.
That.
Yeah.
In Richmond. Yeah. And
that was a throttle sticking, wasn't it? Was it?
I believe it was, but I know because he went in driver's side first.
He slapped the wall.
He slapped the wall hard. Mm-hmm. And we Brian and I did a lot of work after the fact and in trying to develop some of these other things. And one of the biggest problems the track crew had there, and this is coming from Brian. I hadn't talked to anybody at the track about this yet. I just never got there, you know. But one of the things was that they had a lot of trouble doing entry driver's side, opening the head area up to get access to him quicker because of new head surrounds, you know, because of...
Which are made out of what for the audience?
Well, the head surrounds are the and most of the other seat and cockpit safety improvements were as a result of the five deaths that started in, what, 97, and culminated with, you know, Daytona. And that brought on a whole lot of things that people have been talking about for a long time, but nobody did anything with it. So you can throw all sorts of mud in all directions on who was doing what, who wasn't doing what, but to get to where we are right now was the, and I actually went to one of the bigger organizations located in Florida, without naming any names, and said, you guys are going to create a problem here by confining the driver in the cockpit more so and not giving any attention. How are we going to get them out when they wreck? And to be honest with you, my response from one of the top tech officials was, well, they're not going to get hurt now. And I said, well, when you wake up, give me a call and we'll see if we can help you out. So that took a long time to put together, and one of the things that we figured out was that the quickest way to get access into the driver compartment, especially the head and neck surrounds, was being able to get access and get the foam out of the area.
And for the fans, it's a high-density,
high-impact
foam.
That's been developed by a specific number of impact foam manufacturers across the country, primarily in the Concord area, but some of the bigger foam manufacturers.
And it's not that easy to cut
no.
with like a regular
no.
saw, a knife, and try and hack at it.
Well, the thing that a lot of people don't realize, you know, if you're the local Saturday night short track racer, they see a regular racing seat in the car. They haven't actually seen, they've never seen an ARCA car or a NASCAR,
right.
Winston,
right.
a cup car up close. The driver's actually in a cocoon now.
Yeah, right? he's pegged in.
He's pegged in, and his head is surrounded. You know, it's no longer just a headrest there. It surrounds his head.
Correct. They designed the tests to build these seats after the supposed 45-degree frontal impact that Daytona's crash hit. I mean, you know, with Dale. And that was one of the main parameters that they designed the test for. And if you go to Wayne State, you go to Delphi, where they did most of the testing on the labs along that line, well, all the seat manufacturers... most of them participated in it. I know Brian and the folks at Butler were one of the lead companies out there. They weren't the only one, but one of the lead ones. And they started coming back with a lot of data on a lot of different things. But the big problem was that it was primarily focused on that one-degree hit. They weren't focused on the secondary or the third hit. And what was happening was that a lot of these back hits, you know, left quarter in, you know, you take the double hit, it's left quarter in, you loop the car around, back in the fence, left quarter in, the front slams. You get a multiple hit there. The seat wasn't designed, and neither was the test designed for that. It was designed for the right frontal hit at Daytona at, you know, 45 degrees and XYZ Gs, you know. So what's happening right now, and it's been in the development for a little while, is SFI is in the process of putting together seat spec for a new seat cocoon style. Some of that had to come around the COT with the big greenhouse areas, et cetera, to try and get more area for the driver to impact it or to avoid any intrusion in the cockpit.
Which they're following the design of which other type of racing series. It has used that type of cockpit design for a long time.
Tell me, I got a few ideas.
Anybody?
Well, you got some road racing stuff going on.
Road racing.
Right. Yeah.
Really?
Right.
IRL, IndyCar, right. Champ Car.
The thing about IRL is they've always protected the upper body.
Right.
So what does this mean?
The lower
mean
body
for
was not protected in IRL.
Well, right. Well, because of the design of the car.
Right.
You know, it's open wheel. It's an open wheel design. Your feet basically go in the nose of the car.
What does this mean for the local guy?
Well, the problem right now is that a lot of the technology is just slowly coming down to the local guys down here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mean here. I mean across the country. You're getting it's feeding down into Bush trucks. It's feeding down into ARCA. It's feeding down to ASA. You know, the late model series, whatever you want to call it. And what's happening was you're seeing lots and lots more of the local racers who go to PRI and go to all these other trade shows and say, I want to buy this seat because it's going to keep my butt alive. And part of the reason that we had to do this, they're not the only seat manufacturer. So I'm looking at this from a couple different perspectives. We initially designed the wire saw, which Greg has on his trucks, and he takes all his series, which, and I appreciate you.
A what?
The Ziplex wire rescue saw.
Okay.
He has those on his trucks that he goes to IHRA events. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the technology that's been developed in the oval track racing is flooding into other forms of motorsports. So we're having head and neck injury problems. We're having cockpit, you know, restraint problems. We're having track crew problems, and we're doing a lot of work right now with Butler on a lot of the dirt cars outside of the NASCAR and any of the other environments because they have a different issue when they get wrecked because of the new seats.
I was talking to a guy yesterday who's involved in motorsport safety as a professional. That's what he does. And he was a couple of things that he pointed out. One is that the insurance companies are getting into looking at more in depth at what goes on at racetracks as far as regulations
it's
and stuff.
It's about time.
Right.
And the other thing we were talking about was, like, when you see this, like somebody the other day was just bragging to me about what happened at a track where there was a wreck and the guys that do the cleanup, you know, the wreck cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
They were right there on the spot pulling the guy out of the car before the safety team got there.
Yep.
And it's like, well, that sort of thing, doesn't that open up liabilities?
Big time.
For the track owner and other people?
Big time.
We've had some track owners in Florida. I will leave it at that. Who pretty much admitted to me, I can handle everything on the track. I can run the tow truck. I can run the jaws if I get them on my track truck. I can run them everything else that I need to do. And I asked the guy, when's the last time you had any training on that? When's the last time you actually worked as a team and did training at the track, et cetera? Don't need to. And part of the problem that most of these short track promoters have, and I shouldn't say short track, most of racing in general, it is entertainment. It is a sport. We don't have the same luxury on the track that we had in the street. We could have the police, you know, shut the street down for however long it needed to do an extrication, hazmat spill, whatever you're going to have on it. We don't have the luxury to do that. So the people that are working on these track crews, you know, how many you can look at any website or any video clip on the web and find people running to somebody's aid in KEDS, shorts, and a T-shirt. Or you got guys out there with black pants and real dark clothes. You can't see them on the track. You can't see them from the stands. So there's a lot of things that people are not really paying attention to. Most of it's common sense, but a lot of it comes down to funding.
Well,
a lot of people don't want to spend the money for a good track, and to do that, you need to have good equipment, the training props, which Craig and I are working on. You need to have people who are committed and who show up to actually want to do the right thing and do a job instead of just saying, I'm going to get a free ticket to watch the race.
Well, exactly, and it's just like we talked earlier. You know, it's training experience and, you know, having the proper equipment, personal protective equipment, the right tools to deal with the hazards that you have at a racetrack. You know, you've got thousands of gallons of gas in the pits at any one time. And this is highly volatile racing fuel, you know, 107, 12, 14 octane, whatever it is.
Right.
And this stuff does not take much to set it off. You've got oil, you've got gallons of oil, used oil all over the place. There's a lot of hazardous materials that we don't even take into account, too. So it's the whole thing rolled together into one.
Well, here's one a sidebar on that is why did they restrict some tracks, I'm trying to remember the exact term on when they did it, but generators running in the pits and the infields and changing the fuel cans to instead of plastic cans, going to aluminum cans because they had a bunch of motorhome fires in the damn pits.
Mm-hmm.
What's that got to do with the racetrack?
Right.
Nothing, but it's the whole picture.
It's probably because they had the fires. The insurance adjuster says, oh, my God, they had a fire in the pit area, not on the track.
Well, you know, one of the other things I got, you know, a lot of people don't realize a lot of the hazards, like you said. Even, you know, beyond track owners, the people that are actually in the pits, like, you know, people didn't realize why John banned barbecues in the pits.
Right.
You know, grills.
Right.
An open flame in the pits.
It rolls back to having common sense, which we lack at a lot of places, and it usually takes a tragedy for someone to wake up and realize certain things shouldn't have been done. Well, we've done them that way for 100 years, so, you know, we're going to keep on doing them until something happens. Somebody gets injured or something
blows up. You get a barbecue grill
up.
Flaming up, you know,
well, I see guys
right next to 30 gallons of high-octane fuel.
I see crew members smoking.
Smoking cigarettes.
Smoking cigarettes 10 feet from a whole line of car stuff with gas and
working over the carburetor. I had a guy working over a carburetor one time with
me?
A cigarette, and guess what was in the carburetor?
I used to do that.
Yeah.
I watched the guy last year when I was working with Nick on that on his truck.
Yeah.
Walking back with 5 gallons of gas on his shoulder with a cigarette in his hand. I said, "What are you, an idiot? You can't fix stupid."
Okay.
Well, yeah.
All right. You know what a stick of dynamite is, right? You know what that'll do.
Yes, I do.
Well,
know
one
what
gallon
do.
Of gas is equivalent to a stick of dynamite as far as explosive power. So you imagine 5 sticks of dynamite, what that will do.
Well, so back to the product.
Yeah, back.
Right. So it was part of that whole deal. What we ended up doing was.
Get off your soapbox.
This has been.
I'm on yours now.
safety soapboxes, they can be a real pain in the butt. So sometimes you just got to pick and choose your battles and see where you can work and be the most effective. And where we wanted to really try and attack the whole issue on this thing, it ain't going to happen overnight by any one particular person. So I chose what I'm working on with the seats and the restraints and everything else like that to work on focusing on with the industry end as well as the fire and rescue end.
And tell them about
people are doing that.
And tell them about your saw is going to be soon or is an option in the Butler line of
seats. It's pretty much
seats.
An option in every one of their seats right
so,
now.
So Jack, his saw comes pre-installed in the seat, which will enable the rescue crews.
Right, we get
the saw is part of the seat. How does it work?
We got two options on it. One, like I said initially, it first started out as a rescue saw for the track crews to use. Because we were trying to get rid of the saw blade issue, the mm-hmm. you know, the reciprocating saw, the knives, all the rest of that stuff to try and cut the foam out of the head surrounds. And most of the time that has to happen quick before you even talk about taking a set of jaws. Everybody wants to have a set of jaws. If you don't have basic hand tools and can't do basic stuff, you just spend a lot of money on stupid stuff. So what we decided to do is let's make this simple, the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. So we took the rescue saw that we designed for the track crews. I got to put it in a pouch, and I'm in the process of getting my video in squared away on my website and how it goes at rsisafety.com, so I can get that out there for people to look at.
And there's a ton of information on this site. I'm looking at it right now.
And it's not even close to what I want. But you know, when you're a small guy trying to make inroads to big places, you got to take your time. And it's taken me a little longer than I wanted, but that's the way it is. So. But what we ended up doing was, because there's so many seats out there from different manufacturers and all different types of racing, We took the track crew perspective of it, and they got two different saws designed in it. One is primarily for the foam removal, and they have another secondary saw that we kind of stumbled into to actually cut components of the seat out if you had to. But one of the things I thought was, if we can save some time and work with some of the seat manufacturers, I actually have a setup designed right now in some of the sprint cars I'm working with Butler and some of the, we're working on a couple of ARCA deals and some other stuff. We actually pre-install them in the seats, and we put a notification decal we made on the car, and we're putting the training information out to the rest of the track crews and anybody who wants it on the site. So when the track crew gets on scene, these saws are already pre-installed in the seats. It saves a lot more time to just pop the upholstery off on the seats, pull the foam out, and now you've got quicker access to for a driver diagnosis, for treatment for any injuries you have. And sometimes they just get stuck in an area they just can't get out of. This just makes it easier to get out without any further damage to the seat or the car, cage, roof, anything like that. Initially, that's the quickest thing, is get at them quick. And once I, now I've got this resolved, we've got a couple other hand tools we're working on, and I can get back on my backboard system now that I'm able to get access into the seat and out of the seat. It's been very, the feedback's been very well received by most of the people who, most of them, given them saws to. And you know yourself that unless you want endorsement, you got to write a check. So most of these people won't tell you that they got their saws, but I've got them in some of the larger open wheel series. Those guys who work with me on some stuff, and stock car and some drag racing stuff.
So getting back to the what I was starting to tell you with the seat, this saw, it has a little strap of attached.
Right, it's a Nomex strap.
It's pre-installed in the seat. It's attached to the seat. It's buried behind the foam or in front of the foam with the strap, so the rescue crew can identify
right.
the strap.
Right.
They pull the snap off, grab the strap, and pull it towards them, and it literally cuts the foam away from the driver, and the other end stays attached to the seat.
Right,
so it's like having the saw there without having to carry it and bring it up to it.
Right. It cuts the glue joint and the foam right where the...
And is it true that all of these safety innovations that have come about are keeping the insurance companies at bay, or in the prices for insurance down? Is that what this is doing, and thus is this help the owners?
Well,
that way
it's a learning promoters? experience. It's a learning experience for the insurance companies as well, because those of us that have to make these recommendations, the insurance company, you know, they don't, their experts are the people, those of us out in the field working.
Right.
So we have to tell them, hey, This will help reduce the liability, and that's why you need to
right.
look at this when you look at a facility and try and determine, you know, your rates or your underwriting guidelines. But this equipment makes our job easier, enabling us to get to the driver faster, which is all about timing, and you know, it helps to get them and for their treatment. So,
speaking of liability, I was looking, doing some research the other day, sort of in reference to this, because we're going to be having, over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, we're going to have various people on from around the country talking about different aspects of motorsport safety. And I was doing a little bit of research. I ran across this one law firm. They just secured a $40 million judgment for a boxer who was injured in a boxing match where there was no ambulance
mm-hmm.
on site.
You know how many places in this country that the emergency response plan is just dial 911?
What do you need an ambulance
for? And let it
for?
Happen.
What do you need an ambulance for?
I don't know.
What do you need an ambulance for? They're right down the station. The station's right
again,
down the street.
When you go around to motorsports websites, including the one that I'm involved with, Carnac.com, including that one, but not just it, all over the place, there are self-appointed experts.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are just fans who have their means of expertise is the fact that they've spent $12,000 going to races watching, and the other ones are promoters who.
Those are the dangerous people.
We don't need no stinking ambulance. The station's down the street. If we need him, we call
right.
911. We don't need no stinking fire truck. If the guy catches on fire, we got fire extinguishers
around.
Well,
here's the other flip side of that, is that there have been several instances. I've been, especially when I was up north, and there's been other places I've been to down here, where you've had people attempting to do the right thing. Now, when you see torches come wheeling out of the pits because somebody's stuck in a car and there's nobody taking care of stuff. I got guys trying to cut people out of a car with a pair of hand shears. I've been there, I've seen it, hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes to try, and finally the fire department comes. when the people in the stands finally get fed up of seeing how inept and inadequate the response is at the track, mm-hmm. and they call 911, the game changes. Now the responding people coming in, they take over the scene. Track doesn't have any real private entity or not. When the sheriff shows up and when the fire department and the county ambulance show up, they take over the scene. And most of the time, because this is an advanced type of like the stunt, deals you do with the stunt driving and that type of pyrotechnics and stuff, this is a lot of advanced training and stuff that most, I never went through that training when I was in the fire service.
Right. They don't have the expertise
that's the problem,
to handle motorsports type situations.
Right. And most of these track owners, unless they're proactive.
Right.
You can probably count the proactive people, on one hand.
Exactly.
Who really want to work with the local EMS providers or whoever's going to do with it to do drills and training and stuff like that. You can't get props.
And it's in their best interest, really, to be on top of this and consult experts in the field and get it done because it lessens their liability, creates a better public relations image for them and for the sport.
It's in their interest to be, again, proactive and work with the local authorities they're in their district because they're the ones who are going to have to come investigate when the place burns to the ground or when somebody,
when a death
gets
occurs
injured or a death.
Right.
So.
Well, I think what we're going to do here is we're probably, for a lot of people, going to beat this subject to death over the next month, but that's what we're going to do. So we're going to come back in just a minute. I think we're going to a break right now. In another moment of silence. Go for it.
I put it on.
You put it on?
I put it on.
You got to push the sound up. No. Technical issues.
Hi, I'm Richard.
I'm Susan.
A Fast Time
Turn to the power of Short Track America Motorsports Entertainment, Carnac.com, for all local and national racing news from all over the world.
That's Carnac, KARNAC.com.
Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. CJ Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development and Construction Company in Tampa at 813-202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development and Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call. Evergreen! Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to sprint car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you.
And that was it. That was a crash.
It was a crash?
That was a crash.
It did sound like a crash.
Well, it was a crash. It
just didn't this party just got crashed.
It just didn't have the thump thump.
Well, now give the intro that you gave earlier, Craig. Come on.
Bring him to the lanes. Bring him to the lanes. Hot Rod. Hot Rod.
Help me.
What's going on, Stage and Stevie? Oh, that's your old name, right? Now it's
not Cajun Stevie?
No.
Staging.
He used to be in the staging lanes.
Oh, staging. Okay.
Now he's up in the booth.
Yeah, for many years I lived out there in the lanes out there. I had a lot of fun out there, lots of smoking.
And let me tell you what, I witnessed history when he had his red jacket, which was very famous. And tell him what happened to your red jacket.
They tried to make me wear a red jacket.
Is that right? Oh, that ain't going to happen. Hey, Steve, we got about 7 minutes to talk about... the Harley drags that are coming up. We've been talking about it a little bit. We mentioned it a few times tonight, and we've got some ads flying around Karnak and some articles being put together to promote it. Tell us about the All Harley Drag deal.
Well, I'll tell you guys, the All Harley Drags, it's really a cool deal. I've basically always been just a straight liner with four wheels, but not too long ago got involved with the All Harley Drag Racing Association, and I have discovered a whole new world of drag racing. In fact, if you guys would like to discover it, you're all invited. I'm telling you right now, the All Harley Drag Racing Association is headed to Georgia at the House of Speed for the Stone Mountain Harley-Davidson Southern Nationals. It's going to be May 26th and 27th. And you get the chance to experience, there's 16 different classes, all Harleys, anywhere between, I'd say 300 to 400 up Harley-Davidsons, from gasoline-powered engines to nitro burners. And some of these guys that ride on these nitro burners, you just wonder, what in God's name are they thinking? You know, you talk about excitement, and this is the only racing in the world that these guys go 900 feet on one wheel before they even set it down, quarter-mile racing. So extremely exciting. You'll see 200-mile-an-hour-plus runs, and they run the quarter-mile basically almost 6 seconds flat. Not quite there yet. They're right on the edge of hitting that magic 6-0. They run down in the teens. 210, 15, 20 mile an hour. And just excellent, excellent week of racing. It's something they do have that I think is really cool. And they do have a special deal for our military. If you are active military, and all you have to do is bring your ID, and you get in absolutely free. So I think that's really a cool deal. Of course, kids under 11, they get in free as well. You know, it's going to be a weekend of entertainment, not just drag racing now, because they're also going to have bands playing there, and just a huge, huge midway, where if you do have motorcycles, and I know a lot of the guys, you know, that listen to your show, they turn left, and but they do have bikes. They got those hogs sitting at home. And if you'd like to get some really cool chrome or find out the latest pieces that are available for your Harley, hey, this is the place to go, because the factory guys come in and they set up, and anything from leathers to chrome, it's there. It's a really neat weekend, really a weekend of entertainment, guys. Camping's available, everything.
Like we said, it's a family affair again, right?
Oh, it is. It's a giant family affair. There'll be trailers and cooking going on. Boy, you'll be able to smell anything from hot dogs to steaks out there all night long. It's a
family affair. Oh, here he goes. Craig's having fun playing with the toys, the electronic toys here.
Hey,
a little Sly in the Family Stone.
Hey,
you know, you got to remember those old DJs, you know, they smoked a lot of smoke back in the old
days. Yeah, no doubt. They
never quite got out of their lungs, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is. Steve, now, I guess Tuesday, today's what, what's today's date, 15?
15th.
7/15. So I think it's May the 29th, I believe, is the date that we're going to have some of the winners from Commerce, the Stone Mountain deal on Real Racing USA.
Oh, absolutely. I think you'll enjoy hearing some of the stories these guys will have to tell you as well. Very interesting individuals. And we'll have a really cool night that night. Something a little different. I think you guys will enjoy it. You're going to meet some really, really neat guys. I truly enjoy working with these guys and watching them race.
I've seen the Harley races a few times, and when I saw the Nitro Harleys go, mm-hmm. I just stood at the end of the track and I went, "Why? Why are you doing that?" But I mean, it's hair raising.
I've been at the end when they've been.
It's hair raising to watch these guys, and like you said, they'll come off the line, you know, a third of the track on one wheel.
And I'll tell you, Steve,
it's a huge adrenaline rush. No doubt. Playing. You got to remember, you know, in dirt car racing, you've got a full roll cage, you've got all this safety equipment, you've got a 5-part harness, I mean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These guys.
Got cowhide.
It's a little plastic strap that goes to the cutoff switch to kill the motor.
Stevie.
I mean, yeah, and some leathers.
Stevie, tell them about the guy that has the little parachute behind his bike.
Pardon?
Tell them about one of the guys that has, like, a little parachute behind his bike. For those of you who haven't seen that, it's unbelievable. There's a little he puts a little parachute out to stop him.
Yeah, I think
as an accident. Yeah, I will tell you that one thing that I do want to bring up. I'm not very familiar with him so much, but we also had an electric motorcycle in our last race.
Wow!
Now you know to show you how electrics have come a long ways. This is a giant battery, I guess, with a big drill on the back.
And a hybrid.
It runs 8 seconds.
In oh, my God.
I think it was 157 mile an hour was its fastest speed.
I hope that damn thing don't short out.
Oh, what a sound it made. Basically, you heard the tire squall as the smoke just billowed into the air. And he rolled up to the line, you know, and I thought, oh, I'm used to seeing a lot of these electric cars and stuff, you know. And, you know, it's okay. I mean, they accelerate, they pull away, you know. And it's the future, and you don't expect a lot. Well, this guy, his 60-foot time was like 1.61 in 60-foot time. And I thought, holy smokes, you know, he is slammed back in the bucket. This guy is riding. And the sound, it kind of sounded like a rocket. All you heard was, and it was gone. I thought, this is the future. Holy cow.
Yeah, we're going to.
Really interesting.
Steve, we as a matter of fact, Rick and I were talking about this earlier tonight. The very first show we ever did, a motorsports racing show broadcast type deal on the Pier 1490 back in 2000, our very first guest was Mike Ferris, who's a Nitro Harley drag racer. That was our very first guest, and he was on our show, what was it, like December or something, Rick? He was on our show, I believe, in December.
Yeah.
He won, I guess he was won one of the championships last year.
He won the world championship.
Yeah, that's
he
what
was
I
the
thought.
Champion.
But he lived here in Bradenton. He just moved not too long ago. Mm-hmm. But we had him in here at the Snook River Grill Live, and we picked his brain for about a half an hour. We're going to take that interview, a copy of that interview, and feature it for the next couple of weeks right there on Short Track America so people can get a taste of it before the show for the 29th. But, yeah, it's wild and crazy. These guys, like you said, I mean, on one wheel.
900 foot to 1,000 foot is not uncommon. It looks funny because you can be at the 8th mile mark, and as it goes by you, you realize that the front wheel spokes are not turning. They are at a dead stop, and this thing is flying. And they're absolutely exciting. And you see these drivers, in order to steer these things, the slicks are so wide that they have to use their body weight. And the torque of the motor wants to pull it towards the guard wall. And so they literally lay their bodies off to the side to make it go out through the traps and go straight. And I this happened one time at a track up in mid-Michigan when the Nitro Harleys were racing with the International Hot Rod Association. And one of the drivers, actually, he hit a bump or whatever as he went through the traps at 200 mile an hour plus. He bounced off, but held on with the handlebars and bounced back on the bike. And I know that, oh, yeah, there goes Stevie telling another one. I had too much smoke, too, but I swear to God, guys, I saw it happen. And ESPN must have replayed that thing 30 times. I did the interview with him on that, and it was like just another day at the office, Stevie, just another day at the office.
That was big Chicago Joe, wasn't it?
Well, Chicago Joe, now, speaking of Chicago Joe, he just had a bad accident. In fact, we were out in Arizona, and at 201 mile an hour, the reason I know it was 201, that's his bike took out the mile per hour cone. His bike was the last thing to go across the line.
Well,
he slid at 200 mile an hour and bounced around and stuff, and believe it or not, when he come to the end, he come up on his feet.
Oh, God.
He went in the dirt with us at Edmonton when we were up there. He went off the end, and that's a big guy. I mean, he's big. He's big.
So, Steve, where are you going this week?
Well, this week I'm headed up to a little track up in Roxboro, North Carolina. We're doing a pro mod show up there. Got probably in the neighborhood of 16, 18 pro mods on doing a quick eight show up there in a big bracket race deal. It's a really nice little country track up in the northern part of North Carolina, all concrete. Great stands, I mean, nice concession stands, clean restrooms. It's really a nice facility. So if anybody listens up there in the North Carolina area, if you'd like to come up and see some really good drag racing, Roxboro, North Carolina, absolutely a super place to go in and watch pro mods.
So can we get back with you next week then and get another update on the upcoming All Harley Drag Show?
Oh, absolutely. I'll not only bring you stuff on the All Harley Drag Show, but probably. We'll see what happens up at Roxboro. I may have some stories to bring back about that one as well.
Cool.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot, man. We'll be talking to you next week.
Hey, absolutely, guys. I enjoy it. I look forward to seeing you again.
All right,
Steve. Take it easy.
I'll call. I'll take you drag racing.
All right,
brother.
Take care, guys.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
That's our good old Stevie.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break. We're coming back with Skip Wall, talk a little Hooters Pro Cup, and maybe a little
Bristol
more about riding.
Number 30, Toyota Industrial Equipment, Florida Lift System, Southern States Toyota Lift Truck. And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Hi, this is Bill Green from Real Racing USA on Short Track America. On behalf of Jack Smith, Rick Angies, and myself, we want to invite you to our Tuesday night party that is Real Racing USA. We're talking about fun and food. Also, you never know what they're going to say when you bring them up on the interview and put them in the hot seat. But drop on by, join us for some great food, some great times, and a whole lot of fun at the Snook River Grill. That's the Snook River Grill, formerly known as the Fumble Inn, just 3.5 miles from I-75 westbound on 64. Come on by, visit with us, we'll talk to you, we'll talk at you, we might even talk about you. But you want to be there, you want to be at the Snook River Grill on a Tuesday night from 7 to 9. Don't miss it, it's well worth the trip.
You know, Rick, most media guys go to the races to watch the races, report on the races. Skip Wall goes to look at the girls.
Really?
The Hooters girls.
We heard that.
How's it going at up in the Hooters Pro Cup world, Skip?
It's doing just fine. Love going to Hooters races because once you get too late, you get to see all the Hooters girls.
I bet you do.
Enjoy the scenery.
But isn't it true that when you put them pictures on the website, the ones with the Hooters girls get more hits than the top drivers?
Oh, absolutely. We had a little fun. The race they had in Concord, Chase Pistone won his first race, and he gave one whale of a champagne party in Victory Lane, and he got the Hooters girls wet, and it was, you had to edit your pictures. I'll just leave it at that.
Hey, nothing like a wet Hooters girl, is
now,
it?
Now, Skip, this is a family show here now. Let's settle down.
Just forward me those pictures.
So how's things going with Hooters Pro Cup, especially in the South this year?
Well, they're looking up on the upscale. They cut back the schedule this year, and we got Woody Howard to move to the South, and he wins South Georgia. Matt Hawkins comes down to Lakeland, he wins the first race of his Pro Cup career, and then we have Clay Rogers that moved up in the North this year, and Clay's already leading the North points, and we've had two races in the North, but yet we've had two winners from the South that's won the Northern races. So Bobby Gill come up there and mowed them down at South Boston, and Mark McFarland that came over from the Busch Series last year, he's back in the Hooters Pro Cup, and he wins Shenandoah. Both of them are Southern drivers, but they ran it to Northern races, so that'll all come to the end because the next Northern race will be up in Madison, Wisconsin in 2 weeks. So I expect we'll see a Northern winner going up there.
So I know Michael Rich and Daniel Johnson were having some negotiations over the past few weeks. How's that thing sorting out?
That seems to calm down. It's fizzled out, and you know they're both great drivers. We all get caught up in the situations, and that kind of escalated more than what it was. And then we ran the story. We were able to get a picture of them with their arms wrapped around each other, and we kind of smoothed it over on the story that we wrote, and then when they actually encountered each other on the track during the race after making up those accusations and everything, Daniel Johnson just pulled out of the way and gave him a lot of respect, and that just kind of ended that. So it all worked out.
Now, Skip, you just brought up something that we've been talking about earlier tonight. You got into a little bit of a problem there, maybe with a little bit of a problem with some of the stuff you wrote about that. Some people didn't necessarily like the way you wrote it. Now, you've been writing for about 3 years or so?
Yeah, I've been about 3 or 4 years and been writing. And
How hard is it for you? How hard a deal is it? And what do you go through to put together a story?
Jack, I'm going to lay it on the line. It's awful tough to write. I'm no journalist. Never took journalism in school. I've learned it by the seat of the pants, and I've learned from the best, John Barker, over in Lakeland. I read his stuff, and I love to read Mike Mulhern from the Winston-Salem Journal. David Poole writes very good article. But what I've learned, Jack, is to be honest and upfront, and write about what people want to hear, and tell it like it is, and not try to hide it, but just tell it like it is, and not make it a press release. You write a press release what you want them to hear. But when you're writing about a story, you're writing what the facts are and what the truth is, and that certainly is what I've learned to do and what I've done, but it's come with a price. Some of it's been controversial, but, you know, all in all, you can't please everybody, and there's always going to be someone to put down whatever you write. And sometimes if you have to back it up and show your resources, then sometimes you have to show that too.
Right. That's one thing about writing, Skip, is that you can't ever back down once you put it out in print, and you got to be able to back it up.
Oh, absolutely. And
you've had to do that a few times, haven't you, Skip?
Oh, yeah. We've gone at it several times, us and Hooters. We've had to get some other people involved, and you know, you seem to reach a medium somewhere along the line, but if you write and speak what's on your mind and how you perceived it to be, then if you get up, then you know, you put it up there, and it sometimes brings out a lot of controversy, and sometimes you just have to live with it. And, you know, you dig your grave, you got to live in it.
Now, when you're covering things, and you don't necessarily write race reports. Occasionally you do, but mostly you write articles, little featurettes or feature stories about drivers for the Pro Cup site on Carnac.com, and you also write sometimes some just plain old editorials, like about opinion pieces. That's the kind of writing you do, and that's got to be harder even still, because you're guaranteed to make somebody unhappy.
You're absolutely right, and that's more my style. That's what I've found that works best for me. The Hooters Pro Cup people, they have their own media staff, and they do an excellent job on writing the race recaps, and they have more stats than what I have, and so I kind of let them do the race reports, and I follow up with feature stories, and love writing on the message board. You know, the old saying, the picture says 1,000 words. Well, you know, you put a picture up, and then you can just put whatever the facts it is that goes behind that, and that seems to what's worked best for me, and on the Carnac message board. That seems to generate a lot of issues there, and you know, if you got a good picture to go with what the rumors are that people are writing about, then a lot of times when I write, it doesn't get a lot of controversy back, because usually I can put some facts right at it and be the end of it. But if you put it out there on something that you see, and it's created a lot, and a lot of people have their own opinions, particularly when you see a fight goes on down the pits or something. You know, there's a whole take of different viewpoints.
1,000 words makes a picture a hell of a lot better.
It certainly does, but you know, it's all in all, it's very enjoying. If you feel that
they have fights in the pits at Hooters Pro Cup races.
They've had a few.
I've seen Jimmy.
go ahead.
Benny Gordon's body slammed one in Myrtle Beach last year.
Oh, that's right. On top of the hood of a car, right?
Right on top of the hood.
Yeah, buddy. And
that was a lot of controversy. And we had a driver a couple years ago, he got taken out of the ballpark at Jennerstown. He got escorted right out of track.
Ooh.
We were on top of that, had a picture had a picture of the policeman escorting the gentleman out. So, it's been at the right place at the right time. It's been writing, going with your heart, flowing with how you feel. And you know, I feel like, Jack, that if I get one reply that they like what you write, then it's made it worth it.
Yeah.
Even against all the controversy, you know, everybody has a right to an opinion. But if you get one person replies back, that's a good story, or we agree with you, then you feel like that you've made that effort worthwhile.
There you go. So when's the next Hooters Pro Cup event that you'll be covering?
Saturday, June the 2nd, I'll be going to the Southern race down at Peach State in Jefferson, Georgia.
Yeah.
The next Hooters Pro Cup race will be on May 26th, and that's up in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, you're not going up to Cheesetown?
I won't be going up to Cheesetown.
Yeah.
I'll probably be covering Bowman Gray.
Now, how many people will fill that place to watch the modified show?
11,000.
Yeah, and you're going to have pictures, right?
I can have pictures.
All right. Cool, man. We'll be back in touch with you, and you just keep doing a good job, man, because you really, really have come a long, long way with this.
I appreciate that, Jack. And while I'm thinking of it, I want to give a plug to Robert Jeffries and Lee Jeffries. You had Robert Jeffries. We had him on the Steel of the Pants one night last year after Bowman Gray Stadium. I found him in a hot dog house eating dinner, and we put him on the show.
That's right.
They had a first-time thing this past Saturday night. It was a father-son duo at Bowman Gray Stadium this past Saturday night, and it was the biggest race of Robert Jeffries' career, and he finished second to his son.
Oh, wait.
And they've been
awesome.
Wanting to do that for a long time. It's a 100-lap modified race. So hats off to Lee Jeffries in first place and Robert Jeffries in second place.
All right, man. Good deal.
All right, Skip. We'll be talking to you soon, brother.
Guys, I appreciate you having me on the show. Cool. Call me anytime. I'll talk to you soon.
Sure. Take it easy, Skip.
All right.
Skip Wolf. All right. Two hours.
Well, you know what?
Huh?
Next week, more on safety.
Right. Who's gonna be
Craig,
on the show?
Craig, look at Craig. Craig's
gonna be on the show?
Craig's gonna be in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Shh, be quiet.
And, yep, we're gonna have Keith. We're gonna have Keith back to talk some more about this stuff. But
yeah,
the safety.
Yeah,
stuff.
Keith.
But we're also gonna have Patrick Sheltra.
Uh-huh.
And
maybe Chris Mize.
No, that's the following week.
Oh, that's the following week?
Yeah, that's the following
week. Why you got it on this piece of paper?
Because that's the following week.
You're getting ahead.
And now there's somebody calling us and trying to keep us here. Go ahead. We'll talk to him.
Don't you just love live radio? Wrong number. Sorry, wrong number. It would be
Craig. Craig, you're going to be in Tulsa, right? Craig?
Yes, Tulsa. Hold on.
Go
you
ahead.
Know who, you know who that is?
Slap him on. Slap him on.
Help! Help! Somebody
put him
me.
On. Put him on the air. Hey. Is this the man with women's rights? You're the women's racing rights person? Now,
yeah,
I got to tell you, man.
Yeah, I'm T-Bone.
I'm an Erin Crocker fan.
T-Bone.
You're an Erin Crocker fan?
She was winning the ARCA race, man. Five laps to go, somebody passed her. Now.
Oh, well, she tried NASCAR, too, and where'd she end up?
Ray Everham's house.
Man, come on.
Ray Everham's
come
house.
Come on.
That's a safety issue.
T-Bone, we're going to definitely get you back on the show next week so you can have your say. Okay, brother, we're up against the hour.
We're up against the clock.
Okay.
But you can catch.
I miscalculated the timing.
That's okay. Terry, listen to this, man. What are we doing tomorrow night at 8 o'clock?
We are going to have the ASA Fastlane show. And we're going to ask the public relations guy, announcer, whoever, why there's no women in ASA.
There you go.
Get out of here, Terry.
Ooh. All right, Terry. We'll talk to you next week, man.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
You wait till this maniac gets his
T-bone.
NASCAR show started.
Oh, I can't wait. All right. It's time to go home.
It's time.
Is it time?
Yeah.
Play
the
music.
Take
he
it
doesn't
to the
know
limit.
What music to play.
That's
sure
not
I
the
do.
Music. That's
he
not
doesn't
the music.
Know the music to play.
What? What's wrong with
take
this music?
That's not the music. You're supposed to be playing. I gave you the piece of paper and everything.
I know, but what's wrong? Y'all just killing me.
Because we do the same thing every week. You're killing me.
Hey, guys, thanks.
It's that 20 bucks.
All right, man, we'll see you next time. Thanks, Craig. Have fun at the races next week,
anytime, Rick. I might be here next week. I don't know. It depends if I have to leave early or not.
All right. We'll be here.
At
the Snook River Grill.
Where?
2505 Manatee Avenue East. In beautiful
Bradenton.
Bradenton, Florida.
East Bradenton. Y'all have a good night.
We'll see you next Tuesday night right here, 7 to 9 p.m. Real Racing USA on the Short Track America Networks. Good night now.
One more time.